Jo. Welcome to Long Property.
Hi, Dan. Thank you.
Fantastic. So pleased we've got you on the show. Just for the benefit of the audience, do you mind perhaps kicking off and giving us a quick overview as to how you got into the development business?
Sure, Dan. Yeah. Well, I've been developing property for about 15 years now, and we've developed over about 100 properties, so quite experienced now. But the way I got started really was I started working on my own portfolio. It was 15 years ago, I was pregnant with my first son and picked up the book Rich Dad Poor Dad, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners have probably read. And that was a little bit of a turning point for me. It just made me realise that, gosh, we've all got to take responsibility for our futures. We've got to set up our income and our retirement funds for the future, not rely on somebody else to be managing our money for us. We really need to be educated around finance. So I, at the time, we didn't have as a family a portfolio of investments set up. We had some superannuation, but we didn't have any investment property. So I decided that I'd do a course, educate myself financially, but also in property strategies. And so I did quite an intensive course at the time, and that was went for about 12 months. And by the end of that, I had already sort of put a portfolio together of properties. So the first strategy I started off with in investing, and this was again 15 years ago, back in the year 2000 or so.
Right,
And it was off the plan, buying apartments off the plan in Sydney. Now, I know a lot of that's been going on lately, but it was very different back then. So back then, the developer basically put the properties onto the market at a discount, and you were incentivized to buy them off the plan, by the discount basically. And if you did it in the right time of the market, then you would make some money going up. And lucky for me, it was the right time of the market, and that was purely fluke at the time. So I bought and settled probably four off the plan projects at the time, drew out the equity each time, before I realised that how negative they would actually be to hold. So the Sydney property market, you know, you're lucky to get a 2% gross yield. So back then I thought, well, gosh, I can't keep buying negatively geared property. Plus, you know, I had my little baby by that stage, so I needed some cash flow as well. And right. I started researching some areas around Sydney. So I basically looked at a two-hour radius of north, south, east, west of Sydney. And
Joe, at this point, these were just purely investment properties. You hadn't actually yourself gone down the development part at this stage?
No, but what I realised at that stage, they were all investment properties, but when I realised how much equity I could create from buying off the plan, it made me stop and think, well, how much profit is the developer making themselves? So that actually got me quite interested in property development. And so in the course I did also, they covered off a whole heap of different strategies. And you've got to keep looking at different strategies. So it depends on where you are in the market. So off the plan was great for a few years there because the market was going up and you were getting them at a discount. It's not a great strategy now because you're not getting them at a discount, and the developers are actually overselling them. They're inflating the prices at what they think they're going to be worth when the project's finished, you know, two years down the track. So, I'm not saying it's a good strategy for now, but for back then it was good. I had to switch strategies from there because it wasn't going to be suitable for me to keep doing that type of thing. And, of course, you want to just look around and see what's the best option for the market conditions. So I found the Hunter region in New South Wales, which is a massive, big regional area. It's only 2 hours from Sydney, but it's made up of a lot of towns and cities. So I did a lot of research up there, and I thought, oh, gosh, I could buy a large piece of land with a house on it, and then I could also use some strategies around subdivision and adding value, renovating the house, but then also building a duplex behind. So I did my first development property project up there in the Hunter region, and the land with a three-bedroom house at the time only cost me $150,000. So I completed that development and had a few friends just looking at what I was doing, and they said, gosh, you know, that sounds great. Could you get one of those for us? Could you do that for us? And that's pretty much how Property Blue, my project management company, came into being. So my first two clients, that's how it got started. First two clients were friends, and then from there I just, just added very slowly clients into our Yeah.
So with that first experience we had developing in the Hunter region, was the knowledge that you required to do that, is that something that you picked up during that intensive 12-month education program that you mentioned, or was it really just a matter of learning by doing and figuring those first one or two out by yourself for yourself?
Yeah, a little bit of both. What the course taught me at the time was just, you know, how to locate a good property and how to really research the market, which was very important. So I did a lot of research first before I purchased something. But really the true experience comes from going through the process. So I learned so much on that first one. You know, I just asked a lot of questions and, you know, I was lucky. I had a lot of people, you know, who were working, you know, with me, you know, my builder, the surveyor. I was happy to answer my questions, which were probably quite silly at the time, but, and, you know, really no questions are silly questions. So that is really how I learnt. So I cut my teeth on my very first development, but then pretty much on my two friends' developments as well. But from there on, you know what, even today after 100 developments, we still learn something from each one. So it's really about, you know, getting in and having a go. And, yeah, that's the best way to learn.
Fantastic. So tell me about the actual, before we get onto Property Bloomer, we're obviously interested to hear more about the business, but just in terms of the development experience that you had back then, how did the actual outcome and results of those development projects compare to, you know, some of the returns that you may have realised on just the pure investments that you'd made previous to them?
Well, the very the off the plan strategies, you know, they created some good chunks of equity. I think probably the best one was about 180K or so from the off the plan strategy. But that was, you know, as I say, the market was moving up, and again, the market was very, you know, had very strong growth back in between 2000 and 2004. So I was lucky, and that was combined with luck at the timing of it, because I wasn't that experienced at the time. Now, with the projects we're doing right now, we're creating about that same amount of equity through the development process within a 12-month period. So it's interesting, yeah. So I think the equity creation can, you know, can be as small or as large. It just depends on quite a few factors, of course, that, you know, primarily market conditions.
Yeah, fantastic. So perhaps, Joe, can you give us a quick overview now as to Property Bloom and what it looks like today as a company? And perhaps also just elaborate, I think you were alluding to it there, on like what's the bread and butter kind of development project that you guys can assist clients with? And, you know, you mentioned 180K equity roughly. Just talk us through how you know, returns like that can potentially be generated through the work that you're doing.
Okay, all right. Well, Property Bloom is a project management company. So what we do is project manage everything from actually locating the development site for our clients. So we don't just manage the construction side of things or the planning side of things. We actually manage the whole project
full end-to-end
for clients.
Process.
Yeah, full end-to-end. So we find the land that can be developed, and we have very strict criteria, and we research the areas, that, of course. So we're looking in areas that we know there's going to be good good demand and good, you know, future capital growth due to, you know, other, you know, due to fundamentals of the market, you know, like they're adding you know, the actual councils are spending money there, you know, the government's spending money there, there's new infrastructure going in, those kind of things. So we research the market first, then we'll find a development site for our clients, we'll run the feasibility and the numbers for our client, we'll present those to the client. They'll have a choice of whether they want to move forward on that particular development or not, or otherwise we'll look for another one for them. But it's all based on the numbers really around developing. So we won't proceed with a project unless it's looking good on paper, of course. So once we get past the feasibility and our client secures the property, the land or whatever we're developing, they'll buy that directly themselves, and then we'll project manage the concept planning, like the design and the concept plan into the DA, the development applications, and the council approval process, and into the construction certificate process. And then once we have the CC, all of the requirements of DA and the CC, then the client will go and get a construction loan typically. Once they've got their lending in place, then we'll manage the whole construction. We have a few builders we use, but we have one in particular that we've actually been working with for 15 years. So that's a main area when you're developing, is having a great builder. So once we're under construction, we're on site every week. We inspect the progress of the builder and we report that back to our clients in a detailed update report that they receive every Friday. So they can keep track of the development. But in those reports, we're actually educating them as well. So we're including a lot of information about the process and they can hold on to those reports and have, you know, keep them as a bit of a reference guide. So once we're coming towards the end of construction, we'll start getting the local managing agents in and getting some rental appraisals for our clients. Typically, they want to hold and build a portfolio because we're building 2, 3 or 4 villas. We call them villas rather than units because they have some land area. So they're typically single-storey, 3-bed, 2-bath, single garage with a backyard. So they typically want to hold and take advantage of the depreciation benefits, but they can sell, of course, as well. But we'll manage that process for them and have a tenant in place for them just as they're handing over. And, then we'll seek the depreciation schedules for them through the quantity surveyor and any other little detail that they need at the end. So, manage
fantastic.
The whole process.
That sounds really good. So, and just to be clear, like we're buying land, but I'm assuming that occasionally there'd already be an existing dwelling on the land. Am I correct in assuming then that you might demolish that existing house to build the 2 to 4 villas that you've mentioned?
Yes, we can do that, knock-down, rebuild type style. It's really important in that type of project that you're getting the land at land value. It's really hard sometimes because a lot, even if there's a little old house on there, people are wanting something extra for that. So you've got to make sure the numbers stack up on those knock-down rebuilds. Typically, we're building in newer estates, though. In a newer estate, to compare that with a knockdown rebuild, is you know what you're getting. You've got an all-new infrastructure in that estate, and you can see the land, you can see the fall, you can it's an easier, a less risky type development than
got
a knockdown rebuild.
It.
Sometimes you'll have to upgrade the sewer or the water connections in an older suburb, for instance, and that could add extra cost to your development. But also we do house renovations where we will also look for a house on a big block where we can also then build a granny flat. So that's a lower entry point for some people wanting to sort of look at, you know, get into development but, you know, not spend too much. And it's also a high yield creation strategy. So you get the house rent from the house, rent from the granny flat. You can't subdivide it off. So in New South Wales, you can't subdivide the granny flat off from the main house. So it'll always remain on the one title. So it's really two incomes from one property.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
that compared with, say, a dual occupancy project where we might build a duplex, which is 2 attached villas, but we Torrens title subdivide those at the end. So we end up with 2 separate Torrens titles for the client, and that's how the equity is created. Is really a lot of it's created through the land subdivision. So when you've only got two villas that make up a duplex, and you can subdivide them, you can strata title subdivide them, but Torrens title is, as I say, regarded
more
valuable.
Fantastic. So you mentioned there, obviously, that each development that you engage with has to look good on paper. Can you elaborate a little on what some of the key feasibility items that you look for are, and just that due diligence process? What are some of the key metrics that are important for developers that they need to meet?
Well, one of the most important things is your land. The land that you buy is very important that you get a good development site, because you need to know, obviously, the location's got to be important, but you also need to know that if you're going to develop on, say, a sloping block, it's going to add a lot more to your development costs in cutting and retaining that site and removal of excess spoil, that kind of thing. So it's really important in that to secure the right piece of land, for instance. Also has to be some drainage systems in place. Either if it's sloping slightly towards the rear, then you'd want to have a drainage easement running across the rear boundary. We like to have them sloping a little bit to the street if we can, so you can just drain them to the street. So that, it's really important you get the right piece of land so that you're not going to be adding extra cost by having to do extra site works. After that, then it becomes more about what you put on that land, of course. So design comes down to it, and you've got to be careful not to overcapitalise, particularly if you're developing as an investment tool. then you need to know what the market expects. So in the areas we're developing in Newcastle, for instance, we are putting in higher grade fittings and fixtures than we would say in a different area, say around, say, the Cessnock area in the Hunter. So you need to know the market and what and how much to put, you know, how high to go with your fittings and fixtures. How big as well, because it can add a lot of cost. You know, another 5 or 10 square metres of floor space can actually add quite a lot. Is that going to be, is that going to translate into higher values? So you need to do a lot of research on what the end values are going to be. So you need to have sales references in the market that are comparable to what you're building as well. So that's really important to know your end numbers, what they're going to be worth. And then, you know, there's little tricks that you learn over time. For instance, in the roof design, the roof, actually the trusses of a duplex, for instance, can take up quite a percentage of the cost of the building work. So if you simplify your roof design, have less angles and less gables as an example, you can save thousands of dollars in costs. But then, you've got to also bear in mind the look of the roof as well. So you want to make sure it's interesting, but not too, you know, too detailed. So,
fantastic. Really good. Yeah, so, and then is there like a specific profit margin below which you'll kind of pass on an opportunity and above which you'll start presenting opportunities to your clients?
Well,
like a target
any value margin. Any value you can add is better than buying just a straight investment house, which is you're not adding value to it immediately. So when we're developing, we're creating that equity. So if we can create from 100K up to 200K in equity, that is awesome within 12 months, because then you'll get any capital growth on top of that that may come in the marketplace. Now it just comes down to the client and expectations. I see a lot of people call me and say, I want a minimum of 20% return on investment. And that means they want to make a 20% margin, which is fine, but you've also got to take into other consideration the other benefits of developing property. Even if you make a 15% return on investment, you're actually getting you're creating two dwellings from one property, so you've added to your portfolio, you're getting some really strong depreciation benefits. So you kind of got to look at the big picture with margins and don't get too caught up on them. It is important to have to not overcapitalise and spend too much, but really for your first couple of developments, I wouldn't get hung up on just looking at the return on investment and the margin, because you're going to benefit, one, of course, from experience and learning process, but also you're going to end up with, you know, creating some equity rather than just buying a property that you're just going to sit on and hold and wait for that equity to be created over years.
Yeah, fantastic. That's really good advice. So Joe, in your mind and with all the experience that you've had, I mean, how many development projects would you have undertaken for yourself and or for your clients at Property Bloom now?
Well, over 100. I don't even count them anymore.
Okay,
it's a lot. Yeah.
So in your experience with all those developments, I mean, there are two components that we've already discussed. One is the land acquisition, and two is or the land/property acquisition, and then two is the development process. Do you have like a sense in your mind as to how important either or both of those are? In the context of the overall objective? I mean, once you've, a lot of people say, for example, you always make your money on the buy. Do you agree with that, or do you sense that you can recover afterwards if you don't perhaps buy as well and make up the money down the track?
I think it's always good to get the best price, and I don't think you make all your money on the way in, but you can make a nice chunk. But then you can also miss opportunities as well. So it depends on where and what's on the market and what the demand is. So you could, if you're going to have to pay another 5K for a piece of land, for instance, but it's the last lot left in that estate, or you know, you've done the numbers and everything's stacking up, then for me, this is my personal preference, is just secure that land, because, you know, I think you can lose a lot of opportunity, especially in a fast market where, you know, there's a lot of buyers out there. Having said that, you don't want to overpay either. So you really need to come back to your numbers, and that range of margin is probably the best way to look at that return on investment or margin, is having a range. And then just making sure you don't go, say, below the lower range. But I think you can lose opportunities, and you could be sitting there for over a year trying to secure something if you're trying to always make your money on the way in. Now, it is important that you can, you know, if you do have to pay a little bit more for the land, then you, maybe there's some way you can actually, you know, make that saving on the construction. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways with looking at, you know, your build and where you can save money if you need to pay a little bit more for the land. But it just comes down to the research, the initial research. Is the land actually worth that? You know, and I see a lot of properties come onto the market as DA approved, and they're always inflated, always, more than what they are actually valued at, because they're trying to sell that saving of time of having a DA approval. But also you've got to be very careful on those development sites, because often they're selling them because for a reason. And if they've designed, I've seen this often, people put a design on a development project that's actually too expensive to build. And so they go through that process of getting a DA approved and then start getting a few builders tenders on it. I mean, they might have got one up front and then realise, oh, they've forgotten to add this in and add that in. So it's really important when you're getting your build costs together that everything's covered off.
Yeah, interesting. So on that note, Jo, like, what are some of the mistakes that you see less experienced developers making? I mean, that would be one. Obviously, we've heard plenty of other stories around, selecting builders that end up going broke and having to redo work. And I mean, what are some of the big pitfalls that you've noticed over your time in the industry?
Well, around the builder thing, I have had one builder over the years go into liquidation. It's a nightmare. So you really need to make sure you're working with a builder with a strong financial backing, you know, and that's a bit hard to research. But you need to, so once you've secured your builder and you're happy with the builder, you need to then make sure they have included everything in there, because every builder does, you know, quotes in a different way. And there's items called provisional items. And generally speaking, builders will mark some of the items as provisional items. Now, what that means is, for instance, it could be retaining walls. They'll put an allowance in there for retaining the site, but then that will be a provisional item. So that means that you'll pay the actual cost, whether it's less or more. So you've got to have a builder who actually puts in decent allowances, because a lot of builders will just put an allowance in there, say $1,000 for retaining, but it comes in at $3,000, for instance. And it's no skin off their back, because it's a provisional allowance, so you'll actually end up having to pay
the reserve. The risk is always the developer there, not the builder.
That's right. And there's usually only a few items. Generally speaking, it's, you know, site preparation type things, like retaining walls and site cut and preparation. Look out for those sort of things. Also, you know, just understanding the land as well. Like, you've obviously, you know, you've got to get soil tests done and make sure that you're not building on top of a rock, which can happen. You know, if you hit rock, then that's going to add more to your construction costs, but it won't add anything to your perceived end value. They're pretty much, you know, it's in that site selection and in your builders, and then being able to, you know, assess your builders' costs.
Yeah. So is it safe to say then, Jo, if you've bought well, and then you've managed to source a very good team of people that you're working with, from the builders to the architects, town planners, et cetera, I mean, assuming that you're not going to, in the case of Property Bloom, a manager that looks after everything. So I'm talking about like a junior developer that's having a go alone. Is it fair to say, if they have bought well and they've got a great team around them, that it's then really just a coordination process in your mind, in terms of coordinating everybody to get to that end developed result?
Yeah, it is. Because time is money as well. So you've got to make sure that you're working with, one, a good team that is going to move quickly, because you don't want to be sitting around. I mean, you can't do too much about the council processing time frame because every council is different. But once it's in, or to get it into council, time is money. So you want to be doing all of that design work during the settlement period, for instance, and getting it lodged with council even before you settle on that land to save your holding costs. So it is managing people and knowing that you have good team and people that aren't going to let you down. The builder, whilst you might be meeting with the sales manager in the builder's office, do you know the site managers? Have you met the site managers? Have you seen the contractors they're using? Are the contractors they're using happy? Are the contractors being paid quickly? Because if they're not being paid quickly, then they're not going to work fast. There's a lot of ways you can sort of research that area, and that's why it is good, you know, once you do find a good builder and you're happy with their quality and their finishes, then just to keep building that relationship with that builder.
Fantastic. So just on the cost side of things, I mean, you obviously part one, buy the land, part two, get a construction loan to do the development. How for an investor that's relatively inexperienced in this whole world of property investments and developments, how much more money does that person need to kind of account for if they're going down a small residential development path as opposed to just a more generic buy and hold path in your mind?
More money than how much buffer?
More just in terms of like the overall amount of money that it's going to cost the investor to enter into those respective projects, being A, just regular investment versus B, development project. Does the person that's doing a small residential development need a lot more money to follow that path? I mean, I guess what I'm referring to on the purchase front, but then also to extend there on the buffering side as well whilst you're in construction.
Okay, for a small property development, say like a dual occupancy, you're going to need, there's usually a two-phase process in your finance, so you need a very good finance broker to work with, and so you'll buy the land. And depending on how high you want to gear, so most people, you know, obviously you can borrow at 80% LVR. Some people might want to be a little bit more cautious and go lower than that. Some people want to maximise their finance and up to 95% LVR. So you've got to work out with your financier what your borrowing LVR is going to be. And so there's the initial loan, and then that will tell you how much extra cash or equity you're going to have available to support your loan on the land and then your construction loan. Typically, most of my clients borrow at about 80% LVR on the land and 80% LVR on the builder's contract. So for our type of projects, you're going to need about 150K or so in equity or cash to then finance the balance of that. So you don't want to be leaving yourself short. You do need to have a little bit of a cash buffer just in case there are those provisional items that do come in more expensive or, you know, you don't want to be holding up the building process, scratching around for money. So it's really important up front before you buy anything is to establish, you know, get your pre-approval as to what limits you want to borrow at and work out how much cash or equity you've got available to put into that development process.
Great. So I get the 80% on the acquisition and the construction, but would your clients not also need additional funds, say, to just secure the actual DA through council?
The DA. The way we operate then is we actually have our builder wrap all the costs into their contract.
Right.
So we want to maximise our clients' finance, so we make it easy for them. Rather than having to put your hand in your pocket for all the other little bits and pieces and extras, because there are a lot. So our builder we work with is fantastic, and they'll wrap all those costs into their contract for us, and they'll pay them on behalf of the client. So even the council Section 94 contribution, as an example, can be as high as $15,000. The builder will include that in their building contract, and they'll pay that as part of that DA process. So that actually fast tracks everything too, because the builder's paying those fees and charges along the way. So it's a lot quicker than having, you know, the client, oh, here's a bill, put that together, you know, put this one, pay this one. And it's a much more efficient way.
So just on the example that you gave earlier, though, you were saying often people are like lodging DA applications to council prior to settlement to keep the holding costs down. So is the builder even involved in that stage in terms of helping clients with that? Yeah?
Yep. So our goal is to have our clients' projects designed and the full DA preparation, which is actually quite involved because it includes, energy ratings and sometimes bushfire reports and other third-party consultant reports that are required for the DA. So the DA preparation can take 4 to 6 weeks depending on, the area and what the council requirements are. And also some land estates, you have to get them to approve your exterior colour schemes and your plans before you can even lodge that with council. So we move, that, and that's our job, is to be to manage that as quickly as possible because we want to make sure we've got everything prepared by the time the client settles on the land, because we've negotiated either an 8-week settlement or we may be waiting for land to register. So we have that all ready. We get permission from the vendor who we've purchased the land from to lodge a DA during the settlement period. That's very important as well because you can't just lodge it if it's not in your name. You haven't settled. Yeah. So you need a letter to send into council along with the DA to say, yep, the vendor's given us permission to lodge this DA.
Fantastic. And so with all of those costs that you've referred to in the builder's contract, the bank's still willing to lend 80% against a contract like that and be covering those types of costs as well?
Yes.
Yeah, great. Really good. Really good. Well, this has been extremely helpful, Jo. I'm so pleased we've managed to chat. Maybe just to finish, you mentioned obviously the Hunter region and also Newcastle that you guys have been very active in. How are you noticing just trends in that local marketplace for you at the moment?
The market's travelling really well up there in the Hunter. Sydney is, as I said, 2 hours away, and we've had some, we've had some plateauing in Sydney, although pockets of Sydney are still doing well and others have come back. So you can never look at one market as a whole. But what tends to happen is the Hunter region, because it is close to Sydney, has a little bit of a flow-on effect. So the growth that Sydney's had over the last few years is now impacting on the Hunter. Some people also downsize and they move out of Sydney and they capitalise, they sell out at the top of the market and then they go to a cheaper market to, retire in or save money or tree change or whatever. So the market up there is actually travelling very well. I was just looking at some figures for a client in this particular suburb that we're developing in, and the growth, I think it was about 7.5%. Over the last 12 months, so the median price growth. So, market's doing really well. There's a lot of research people can jump into and have a look at, not just on the Hunter, but any region that they're actually researching, is to go into the council websites and have a look at the strategic plans. What's council got planned for the area? And there's a draft plan available for the Newcastle area, or for the Hunter region as a whole. And you can read about what they're planning, where the growth is going to be, because they actually, they tell you in these reports. So that's one way you can, look at the long-term value of an area, is to read the strategic planning reports that council put together and New South Wales planning. So, yes, I've read that, and there is a new report that they've released recently, and there's a lot of infrastructure work that's going into Newcastle at the moment. So it is travelling really well. It's a great place for investors because it's, a bit more affordable. And that's why we work up in the Hunter, because it is more affordable than the capital cities to develop property in.
Terrific. So, I mean, obviously, and we too are big advocates of education, and obviously you've done a lot of that. You mentioned your 12-month intensive training at the beginning. You're an author of several books, which I'd like to link to actually at the bottom of this post that we do. But where would you recommend people go to look that are interested in learning more about property development? And perhaps are there any educational resources or courses that you could recommend and refer our listeners to?
The one I did is no longer available because I do get asked that a lot, but I don't know what's in the market at the moment. But what I would say to people is, yes, get educated. Don't get stuck in that, what they call it, when you're doing your research and you just got to do some more courses. Yes, analysis paralysis. So don't get stuck in that. And I did see people doing that with when I did my course. They'd sign up for the next one, and they'd sign up for the next one, and you end up paying all this money for all these courses, which, you know, can be valuable, but you, at the end of the day, you've got to put it into action. So for me, it's like, you know, get some education, but then get into the market, take some action, because that's going to be the best way that you can learn. And a lot of our clients learn through the process. You know, we're basically holding their hand through their first development, and then they go on to do their next development themselves. So you really do learn more by actually going through the process yourself.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, we've certainly found out where I think I mentioned to you offline last week when we spoke, we've got two small developments that we're undertaking at the moment, and we've learned so much. Obviously, we haven't done them through people, and we're not operating them in the areas that you're most active in, but we still do have some really good support and a great team around us, and that's just been absolutely essential for anyone that's going down this path for the first time. It's something that I'd certainly recommend strongly, that they work with some experts that know what they are doing and can hold their hand along the way. So,
exactly.
Well, Jo, thanks so much for your time. Is there any last thoughts or anything that you'd like to share with the audience before we wrap up?
Well, no, but they could take a look at our website. It's just poppybloom.com.au. I write a weekly blog as well, so there's all of the blogs are on the website. So there's quite a lot of information if you just want to have a read through it, and you can sign up for our newsletter if you want to via the website as well. So, yeah, take a look, see if you like it.
Fantastic. I definitely recommend that. I've read many of your posts, Jo, and they're all excellent. It's filled with lots of great information. So, any long property listeners would certainly recommend that they go and check that out. Jo, thanks so much for your time. Hopefully we'll do a stage two at some point, and we'll discuss one of the developments in a little bit more detail. But we've covered so much ground today, and it's been extremely helpful. Thanks so much for your time.
Fabulous. Thank you, Dan. Bye.